Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. Look at that, we are back. This is awesome. This is an awesome conference so far. And we are honored to have Sakina from Persona Theory Games. And this title, Things I Wish I Knew Before I Started My Own Indie Studio. Look, like I grew up, I learned from my mistakes, right? I wish I would have paid attention to other people's mistakes. So hopefully she's going to tell you a bunch of mistakes that she made so you can learn from them and don't make the same ones. So Sakina, please. Welcome to the show and take it away.
Thank you for having me and thanks for the invite and the opportunity to talk about things I wish I knew before I started my own indie studio. So I've been, I guess everyone who has been in the indie scene can probably relate to the things that I'm about to say. And first of all, like, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it as well, because I think now that I think I'm in games for 7 years already, I feel like I'm, you know, not so ashamed of all the failures I may have done. And hopefully you will learn something from my own experience. So I guess before anything, let me just introduce myself. Hi, everyone. My name is Sakina Latif. I'm from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Southeast Asia. Previously, before I got into games, I was a producer in Leo Burnett, Kuala Lumpur, where I manage clients from McDonald's to Samsung and Petronas oil and gas companies. And being in a creative line, I feel like I've always wanted to create things. So whether or not I was in advertising or I was in film, so that was my kind of my previous life before I got into games. And I've been in games since 2016. And if anyone wants to hit me up, these are my contacts as well. Okay, so I guess a bit of backstory as well about why and how I got into games. So like everyone I know, there's always like a bunch of games that are the reason why they even want to make games. So for me, these were the games that define my journey and my life, I guess, like of what kind of games I like. Mainly it's most of these games came out when I was very young. And when I was very young, I thought that being in games is quite, you know, it's a far-off dream. It's like one of those things where I thought that I would never be in. Mainly because all these games, as far as I knew, were either made in big Japanese studios or big American studios or European ones. And not many have I, during that time when I was younger, did I ever hear anything from Southeast Asia. And so when I was younger, I picked up this, one of the first few games I actually played was called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, just an indie game probably. But funny enough, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was actually made in my country, in Malaysia. So what ended up happening in my life is that I ended up meeting some of the veterans that did Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and one of them even became my mentor. So it's kind of cool how, you know, my life started from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and somehow I got to meet a mentor that worked on it, and he has guided me through my journey in games. The other games that I probably want to mention, and is probably why I do the things I do, is really games like Resident Evil and Silent Hill. Resident Evil mainly because of I like to follow Shinji Mikami's work a lot. And I think when I played Silent Hill 2 for the very first time, I was quite young even, it made me realize how much story can go into games, and that not every hero in a game needs to be perfect or, you know, a quintessential hero type. So you can tell quite dark, disturbing stories through games. So Silent Hill 2 was one of the reasons why I think now I actually mentor a lot of younger game developers, and I mentioned Silent Hill 2 quite extensively because it's not, especially of that time, it's not like the most direct or obvious game. It's not about a hero saving the world. It's not about a hero who's trying to save a village. It's more darker in tone than most games I've played, even till now. And then, of course, Final Fantasy X and Kingdom Hearts, mainly because of the world building that at that time Squaresoft had. And it also made me want to tell stories in, you know, bigger world building form. So these were essentially the games that shaped how I want to build my games. So also a little bit of backstory about Malaysia. So this may or may not be the same for wherever you're from, or might not even be relevant. But in my country, especially when I first started in 2015 and 2017, we were mostly known as an outsourced country. So a lot of the biggest companies here back then were all art outsourced that has worked on big AAA games, everything from Bandai Namco games to Naughty Dog games. When it came to smaller studios and almost indie studios in Malaysia at that time, was very mobile centric, and this was also because it was the era of Candy Crush and Flappy Bird, and unfortunately it was because those games did super well, especially in Asia. A lot of investors at that time were always asking, like, are you going to make mobile? Are you going to make Candy Crush? Are you going to make the next Flappy Bird, essentially? Or, you know, at that time was Angry Birds as well. So, and I think my way of, like, I knew when I entered games, I wanted to make a narrative game, PC game, and story-driven premium model. Not a freemium model, not a mobile, not on mobile. So at that time, a lot of doors were being shut in my face because I wasn't ticking all those right boxes with investors and publishers around the region. And not many people actually respect narratives. I believe that a few people have told me that this was, again, back in 2015 and 17, that the fact that I wanted to do or I wanted to build a narrative studio is already weird. And on top of it, I wanted to specifically tell Southeast Asian stories, mainly because my background and my team's background comes from storytelling and filmmaking, from our work with cultural work and traveling throughout Southeast Asia. And we essentially believe that we should tell our stories not only through films, but through games as well. So again, every time I pitch my studio at that time, everyone was like wondering why and how, and I'm crazy. I've been told I'm crazy many times throughout my journey. But I was very stubborn. I believe that was, I had something, because at that time I felt like, because of my experience with Leo Burnett and advertising and my experience in film, and also because of my co-founders and my team background and our resources, we had a recipe to tell really good Southeast Asian stories. And I really wanted to make that the focus of my studio. So in 2017, we started Persona Theory Games. And the goal was to make games that tell Southeast Asian stories. My other goal is to find a team that's crazy enough to join my crazy journey. Get funding, which is the hardest part. And the fourth one is probably the biggest mistake I made, was make a big game and then hopefully profit. So the first ever, again, this was 2017, so it was also during the rise of VR as well. So I, on top of making things very difficult for myself, I wanted to make a story that deals with a relationship set in Southeast Asia in VR. And it was essentially going to be quite an extensive project. And initially, I did get like outsourced partners to hopefully help make the game. I got a little bit of funding I managed to get from people who believed in me. And the path was to make a prototype, and then from the prototype, get funding for the big game, and then from there, you know, the whole profit and finished. But that didn't happen. So what did end up happening was I was burned, I was betrayed for trusting the wrong people, or essentially being a little bit too trusting. I've been told over many times, even to this day, that sometimes I'm a bit too kind as well, and I believe people a little bit too much maybe sometimes, and you know, I want to believe they're good in people, but it turns out most people are not good. So and I made a lot of mistakes and trusting the wrong people. So what ended up happening was that wasted a bunch of money and the prototype just went bust. And after that, I think I pitched whenever I kept pitching, I felt like there was even an instance where I was laughed at, because, you know, again, I was trying to make a Southeast Asian centric game, and I was laughed at a pitch in Malaysia, which felt even worse, because it felt like whatever stories I wanted to tell, my own people didn't even believe in me. So I felt like an outsider, and made me felt like I can't make games, because technically I can program just a bit and I can draw, but I can't do all those things very well. And you know, my skill set is producing and business management, but I'm not a great programmer and I'm not a great artist. So it really made me feel like, yeah, I'm severely handicapped, and why did I think that I could make a game studio? So, and of course, on top of everything, there was the looming pandemic that happened. So everything that could have gone wrong as a first-time studio owner, and also somebody who has never even been, prior to making my own game studio, has never even been in working in games. So it went as well as it could have. But you know, I'm also the type that, maybe it's because of my experience with working with tough clients and big clients like McDonald's, it always makes me feel like where there's a will, there's a way. So it can't get any worse, right? At that time, when I remember feeling like it can't get any worse, I feel like, you know, I'm at the bottom and nobody wants to listen to me anyway, might as well just crawl my way up and see what happens. So essentially, a lot of even overseas funders and publishers were saying that they don't really know my team. They wouldn't give me money to a studio that has no experience. So that's when I decided, okay, a smaller scope. I needed to make a project for 1 year, and that's the most I can do on a small budget. And on top of it, do other work, because again, I come from film and advertising, and so does some of my partners. So we manage to make client work, and on the side, we make the game that we wanted to make. We collaborate as well. So I like to think that I got a lot of good karma from my time in advertising. So I called up some friends and said that I need like help with like audio or a bit of VFX, and some people actually came through. So, and then the last thing is we make the thing. So unlike the previous slide, there is some happy ending. So throughout that journey, we did make incredible things. Two of them, the first one being Alam Tak Nyata, which translate to the unseen realm. So this one was a experimental short film in collaboration with a Canadian photographer named Cheryl Hoffman and a good friend of mine named Pauline Fan, where we made an experimental short film. I think this is available either on our website or on YouTube. But this ended up being showcased around the region. And it was also quite well received in art installations. Second film is called Angin Keturunan, which translates to Ancestral Winds. And it's about a family that performs Mat Yong, which is a traditional arts in the northern state of Malaysia. So this one was funded and supported by USAID and the US Embassy KL. So also, this also ended up being like one of my biggest supporters were ended up being the US Embassy in Kuala Lumpur. And then, of course, after years of struggling, I did make the game. So the first game that we released, called Fires at Midnight, it is available on Steam and Epic right now. It will be available on the other consoles soon. And Fires at Midnight took 1 year to make, and it was a tiny team. And it was done all on the side while we were making the films. And I think that while it didn't make like the biggest financial impact to us, but it did prove that my team, despite everything and against all odds, we actually made the game. and all the reviews that and people who have played the game resonated with it. So just a short description about the game. Fires at Midnight is about these two couples surviving a alternate version of the 1999 love bug. And it's a virus where if you make love without the feeling of love, you will spontaneously combust. So in this world, or at least that's also what the politicians say in this world. So it's a lot of layers and a lot of us exploring our stories and our traumas and our relationships, complicated relationships that we have with our family, our loved ones, our country. It has a lot of layers, and it's something I'm really proud of. And every time somebody new plays it, I love to see the reaction of them resonating with the stories that we told. And I think that's it felt really validating. So the game proved, these three projects proved that, number one, we could create really interesting experimental experiences, and also we can make a game together. And that later on, there is some update on the next game that came after Fires at Midnight. But before I go to that, I want to touch a bit more about what I learned from starting my studio to Fireside Midnight, which was released during 2020. So funny that the game was also about pandemic, was released during a pandemic. So when I started my studio, this is really what I thought it would be like. So I thought I would be making the game most of the time. Like I would sit down, I would talk to my artist, like this is the art that I want, talk to my director and writing team, this is how the story should go. Maybe I could even write a bit on it and even draw some of the concept art. And then a little bit, I tried to find the funding and business opportunities for my company. And then not forgetting the admin stuff. Like, this is really what I thought it would be like, owning my own studio and making my own games. But the reality is that this is the reality of what I end up doing and what I'm still doing now. So 20% of my time is actually the game development part. So I'm lucky enough that I am at a place now that I have people that I trust to help run the games, the game development side. So they know what kind of games or what kind of stories or design that I would approve or like without me really being there or micromanaging my team all the time, because there's no way that I have time to micromanage my team and run the company. So the other 27%, I feel like is engagements like this, where I get to talk and hopefully just promote my projects. And also I'm very passionate about talking about either Southeast Asian culture, narrative games, or things that I learned in my journey as a indie dev. Also, I go to events a lot. Most of my team, they're not the type to like going to events, so it's up to me. PR and marketing, because you know I was from Leo Burnett, and luckily for me, like PR and marketing is sort of my foundation. So a lot of the things that you've seen that I help put the foundation on, from our press, website information, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, everything I do with my team. And of course, biz dev. And then this is the reality of owning a studio. The 53% is the most tedious, but the most important. And it's the one that will most likely destroy your company if you're not careful. So this one, again, it largely depends on the country and the laws that you have. Like I would say that Malaysia there's not that many things to follow, but it's still very tedious about submitting forms on time and keeping up with compliances and making sure that we're all up to date with our audit, admin, payroll, making sure everyone gets paid on time, and applying for grants. And then when you apply for grants, then there's always the whole paperwork. And this is the part where I feel like not many people realize that they need help with. So I am lucky enough that I've managed to get help. Because in the beginning, when I first started, I was severely underestimating this 53%. And what ended up happening was the first year, I think my audit was all over the place. Auditors couldn't make heads or tails about what I was submitting to them. And it was all very stressful. So I learned from my mistakes. I got someone to help me. I have auditors. I have people helping with everyone's taxes, admin, payroll, grants, everything. But I still need, like, every so often, every few hours in a day, most of my time is just this. Very little of my time is actually the game development part, which is actually quite sad, but it's what you get for owning your own studio. And you're as a studio owner, you're the one that has to drive the ship. So also, like, I want to talk about, like, in the beginning of my story, I said that when I hit, I guess, like rock bottom, I felt like I was alone. I was being made fun of, or I was just, you know, people were not taking me seriously. But what, because I didn't give up, and because I was also extremely stubborn in, you know, believing in what I want to do and what my team can achieve. So this is kind of like the result of not giving up. So number one, thanks to Fireside Midnight, we had a game released that proved that we could make a game, and we have shipped a game. And as anyone who has ever made a game or is making a game can tell you, that is an achievement on its own, regardless of what size your game is, whether or not it's like a solo dev or a big AAA. Like, releasing a game is not an easy feat. So because of that, we were then I pitched our next game, Cabaret, to Wings Interactive, and they funded the game. And through them, we got in touch with John Eternal. At that time was in PlayStation, and then we got in touch with James Lewis from ID at Xbox. So our team is so like small, even by Malaysian standards, that some people couldn't believe that. I think it was like 1 or 2 years ago when I tuned into Xbox Bethesda Extend, one of those shows, and they had This Is ID at Xbox, and Cabaret was one of the game that was presented during the show, and it represented Malaysia. That was really one of my moments where I felt like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm here. Like, despite the odds, I actually not made it, but you know, to have like something you work so hard on to be seen on a platform like ID at Xbox, it feels like something else. I remember with my team, we were all on Discord, we were like, is this real? Or maybe it's like, it can't happen, right? Can't believe that this is our game made in Malaysia, tiny visual novel game about Southeast Asian monsters, is on, you know, a show like ID at Xbox. And true enough, it is. And I think, like, Malaysians traveling to GDC is like a dream, because so far, and I think this year a friend of mine was in GDC, and they were at the Xbox booth, and on one of the big screens, Cabaret's trailer was there, and it felt like, you know, all the struggles that I went through, like that moment, even though I wasn't really there, but my friend was recording it, and it felt almost like I'm happy I didn't give up. And since then, I have been also supported by Digital Dragons of Poland, and they help fund our third prototype of our third game. Hopefully, I get to continue working on that prototype as well as we onwards to next year. And also through like media and organizations, I've been speaking a lot as well, like from telling stories in games and telling Southeast Asian stories, and getting more Southeast Asians into games, and also encouraging people to tell their stories through games. And well, this is the game, that our second game, and it is out right now on Steam and Epic and Xbox. So I can't believe I get to say that, but PlayStation 4 and 5 and Nintendo Switch is coming soon. Again, we are such a small team, and really it's only one programmer, and even for him, he was never even in games, but he was a self-taught programmer, and even he never thought that, wow, I'm, you know, a lot of people probably didn't think that he would one day make a game on consoles, but here he is with us, with a game on Xbox, telling Southeast Asian stories, showing our monsters to the world, and hopefully in the next few months, we'll have an update on the PlayStation 4 and 5 and Nintendo Switch versions, also with future localization plans as well. Where am I today since that journey, right? So, well, Cabaret is out. Truth be told, it's not like it didn't do amazing, but it didn't do bad either, which is good. Everyone who has reviewed it said that they've never seen anything like it. So since then, since not, you know, giving up in my previous life, I have shipped two games. I did multiple, quite, I would say, great client work, and two short films. Hopefully working on our next title. And then one of my biggest dreams was to actually go to Tokyo Game Show. And I thought that I would be going as a participant, but just three days ago was Tokyo Game Show. And I remember receiving the email saying that Cabaret was selected for the Sense of Wonder 80 Indies Tokyo Game Show selection. And I think me and my team were like, no way. And we got to go to Tokyo Game Show and experience it as developers. And one of the highlights was
you have got to check out our Discord at discord.gg/indiegamebusiness. It's an amazing community of over 3,500 other industry experts. We've got developers, publishers, marketing and PR firms, investors, so many. It's a safe and supportive place to network and to talk to experts. You can learn more about the business of games, or you can share what you know with others. We have exclusive workshops on perfecting your pitch deck, finding a publisher, and more. Remember, it's discord.gg/indiegamebusiness.
We even went on IGN Japan, and that was also quite nerve-wracking because we had to play our game online as well. Okay, so, and I got to meet Harada. So if you guys played Tekken, he made Tekken. So that was a pretty cool moment for me. Okay, so I think it's been 6 years since I started Persona Theory Games, and these are the things that I feel like everyone should think about whether or not you want to start your own studio, because honestly, it's not an easy thing to do. And every time I hear when people want to start their own studio, I get excited because that means there are more indies, but also I would like to warn them on the side of caution because of my own journey. And okay, so some things to consider. First of all, money, right? So money to start, a lot of people tend to ask friends and family. So this is really up to you and what your situation is and how you want to pay back, or is it an investment into the company? Most people I know would go towards the savings. That is also like something I get very nervous about, because putting a lot of your life savings into a studio that is not a surefire thing is very scary. And not to be a bummer as well, but the cost of living around the world has gotten so high since after post-pandemic. And it's not going to decrease anytime soon. So I would think very carefully about the savings part. Did I put any savings? No, I did not. But That was because I was young and admittedly quite stupid with my finances as well. So please don't be me. I also disclaimer, when I started my studio, I was 27. So I think quite young, and that is good and bad. Like, I didn't have as much gaming experience. I got game development experience as some people I've met. So again, that might be a factor of whether or not you want to put in your savings into a studio. Pros and cons, I would say maybe don't put everything in. Angel investors, so this is really also up to your circle, whether or not you want people to be part of your journey. And the tough part for me about investors is trusting them. I think with this journey, trust has been the biggest thing for me. I think I've made a lot of mistakes where I end up getting betrayed. And honestly, the last thing you would want is to have a partner or an investor that you don't feel comfortable with, who end up burning you, and then they're stuck in the company, and out of spite, they don't want to leave. And I've seen a lot of those as well. So again, these are all the realities of owning a studio and how to start. And then if you do take money from people, how are you going to pay them back? Do they want to be paid back? How long do they want to be paid back? Grants, this really depends on where you're from. Like Malaysia has MDEC that has funding for games and film. Whereas I've heard that some other countries may not have that option as well. So I would look at things like Digital Dragons. So Digital Dragons have the last round funded a few companies from different parts of the world. And it's actually a great program. The only thing is that you have to go through Polish time, if that works out for you or not, because for me it was like a little bit tough. But the knowledge and the funding that I got from Digital Dragons and the people that I met through the acceleration, even though we don't meet physically, is really wholesome. So I don't know whether anything else exists right now outside of Digital Dragons, but I'm sure there is. But keep a lookout on those. And then this one is something that I also tell some students of mine as well, about what is your first game? Because I made that mistake already. Like I wanted to make, well, maybe one day I actually told my friends that I will actually revisit this failed project of mine, because I feel like I still had something, but I needed to level up before I could even make that game, because it's way out of scope, way out of budget, way out of experience. So I made the mistake of trying to make a game too big and not really thinking about, like, or understanding what the scope is, and how long it would take. Because I actually thought that in my mind, okay, a 3D VR narrative game with voice acting, multiple choices, will only take, well, a year and a half, which is the silliest thing I've ever heard in my head. Now I can say for sure that given the time and resources, now I probably could make the game. And it'll be a lot better. But 6 years ago, yeah, probably I would have probably like slapped myself. Me now would have slapped myself back then. So think about your first game, especially if you're a team that has never shipped a game. I would think about, it's a different story if I think that if you are like from a big AAA studio and you are one of the big shot, like Kojima, technically Kojima is an indie game. So, and technically, Death Stranding is his first game as an indie studio. So, not everyone can be that level, but for everyone else like me, I would really suggest in making a game within a year and shipping it out within a year. It's okay if it doesn't really do well because you need to prove yourself that you can make a game if alone or with your team. And that makes the conversation with funding a lot easier once they've seen that you have actually shipped a game. Who is on your team? Like, are you one of those crazy geniuses that can actually make everything yourself? Or do you actually are you actually like me who most of the time have to do the admin, HR, taxes, and biz dev, PR, marketing, things rather than actually making the game? Then you definitely need to find your team, and finding the team is one of the hardest things to actually do, because not everyone you hire, like even a programmer or designer, will like the game that you're making, and it's some would think like it's just a job, which for them they do have that right to feel that way as well. But for you who are putting in your blood, sweat, and tears, you really should think about what kind of people you want in your team, and how are you going to support them, and how are you going to even find them, and how are you going to sustain your team throughout this development. And then how do you plan to run your company, remote or office? Before this, I have a studio, and that was pros and cons, I think. Like, pros being like we were all together and it was fun. Cons being I think we ended up playing around too much. So during the pandemic, when we all just had to work remotely, I think, and also because we didn't have to commute and be stuck in a traffic jam, because the Malaysia traffic jam is quite bad and you waste a lot of time, money. So then we end up being quite happy being working remotely, and a lot of my team has growing families as well, so they appreciate being having the option to work remotely. And then of course the thing I always mention is the admin. So are you sure you're ready for this part? So that's a mental question that you need to be able to answer yourself. So the big lessons that I again want to iterate is like, unless you are a Kojima-like figure, don't make the big game. That was really my biggest mistake and one I learned from the most, because I had to learn from getting betrayed, losing money, hitting rock bottom, being laughed at, being felt like an outsider. So, but that really made me who I am today. Also, this is a lesson that I learned from Cabaret. Console porting is really hard. So again, I wouldn't like for your big game, and I see this a lot in when I review student pitch decks or other indie studios pitch decks, is that they would put, I want to make this game is a Souls-like, etc. And then it's gonna release on PC, Nintendo Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, at the same time. And in my head, I already know that is, unless you have a publisher, it is impossible. Because as a first-time developer, it is well, number one, it's very hard to gauge when those dev kits will actually arrive in your country, because Malaysia or Southeast Asia has a lot of ins and out when it comes to sending dev kits. Now it's a little bit easier, but when I first started 6 years ago, it was quite hard to get even Nintendo Switch dev kits. Now it's a little bit easier, but and even the Xbox dev kit took a while to even get to us, and the PlayStation ones. But again, those are things that sounds kind of boring, but also like I would tell people, like in your timeline, you don't know when those console might arrive, and then when to set it up, how to set it up, learning the ropes, learning the sending a game in, waiting for them to send the review back. Those things were things I never knew about, and it really like it made Cabaret delayed for like a whole year because of it, because I didn't know how those things work, and honestly not many people could really tell me for sure because they don't know when certain deaf kids will arrive to my country and things like that. So I learned, and now I tell people like always have that leeway when it comes to their timeline. Life happens, learn to adapt. This sounds like it's kind of obvious, but it's amazing how people forget that humans are humans. People need to live, betrayals happen, and you know, so, and all of us live through a global pandemic. I think I know so many studios in 2020 who didn't make it out alive during the pandemic, and it's no fault of their own, because who knew that a pandemic would happen and things needed to reshuffle, money became a problem, clients were dropping like flies, like people were losing their jobs, and you know, you somehow or other, me and my team learned to adapt. And these are things that you can't control, and just enjoy the ride, I guess. Learn to keep going or not. So many times I felt like giving up, and many times now I'm glad I didn't. But sometimes, very closely, I feel like there are times where I feel like I needed to read the signs, whether or not this is it. Like I shouldn't push things so hard. Maybe I did what I did. I succeeded in doing what I wanted to, and there's no shame in that. And I implore to a lot of studios who had to close down or is struggling right now that, you know, there's no, as a studio owner, I feel for you, and you know, it's tough. And sometimes you just have to either be like me to be extremely stubborn and learn to keep going, or, you know, just accept that you've done what you can and be happy with that. Last is friendship is magic. One thing that I do not regret is the more I keep going, the more I meet a lot of really great people in the games industry. And really, I met so many people who have struggled as I have, who have closed down studios, who are still happy for it, who have made the biggest AAA, work in the biggest AAA studios, who have made small games, who have made who have become publishers, and it's nice that people in the industry are so ready to talk about their experiences. And I think the more we talk about the ups and downs of being a game developer, I think the stronger we become, and also hopefully the next big studio will learn from our mistakes as well, will learn from my mistakes as well. Lastly, I will conclude my talk with like, be prepared for suffering and maybe an adventure or two. I don't regret, now that I can, you know, I'm where I am today, I feel like I don't regret my journey and my choices. Some of them were really painful. Some betrayals even was really painful. Some mistakes were very costly, but I feel like they were, things had to happen for me to learn, and I am here today talking to everyone here because I had to suffer and I didn't give up. And I hope that when you start your studio, or you are starting your studio, you, by listening to the things that I said, maybe it will better prepare you than when I first started years ago, because yeah, I want more indies to succeed. And yeah, so this is the end of my presentation. I think there's time for like Q&A.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. And I was totally not laughing behind the scenes when you showed that graph of what it's like to run a company, because
so true.
That is exactly what it's like to run a consulting firm as well. It's like, I'm going to do this and help people. I'm like, oh, yeah. Wait, I got payroll. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, first question from YouTube. How big of a team do you have, and what would be your first five hires you would recommend for your younger self who is embarking on creating a studio?
Okay, so this, I think this depends on what your own skill set is, because my skill set is definitely PR, marketing, and producing. So I got those ticked out. So what you are might end up missing is game narrative, game design, game art, game programming, and game audio. So I would look at these five. Some of them you can even like collaborate with. There's a lot of audio houses out there that likes to collaborate with smaller projects. I would really recommend reaching out to those. And yeah.
All right. Next up, what are some of the resources or recommendations you may have for those making narrative games? With declining patience worldwide, telling a lengthier story can be challenging.
I don't really have any like for recommendations. I think if you want to tell a good story, I always feel like you have to, I would say, play games, but let's be real, a lot of game developers don't have time to play games. But so the next best thing is to watch a lot of movies or read books or experience life. Resources, there's a lot of GDC talks out there. I feel that's very helpful, but this is nothing to do with like how to be really good at narrative, but I would suggest being good at Excel sheets when you want to write a really lengthy narrative game. With declining patience, you'll be surprised that there's a lot of people out there who are still hungry for lengthy stories. If they're not, then they're not your audience.
I mean, yeah, just recently, I mean, Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Hundreds of hours in. I finally got through just the main story of Starfield without any of the other stuff. And I spent probably 50 hours on that. So there is a good market out there for games that take longer and longer story. Not all the gamers are short-patienced.
Yeah.
From Robin on Facebook, I was wondering, what do you think the most important or missed thing to do as an absolute step number one when you're thinking about starting your studio? Besides legal and registering the company, is there anything that needs to be specially prepared?
Your one-year plan. I know a lot of people say 5 years, but I always like to work smaller, more realistically. Especially when you first start your own studio, what is your one-year plan for money, getting funding, getting a team, getting a pitch deck ready, getting a build ready, all those things, I would say.
Did you build a business plan?
Yes, and the first one was the most ridiculous one I've ever seen. So that's why I say 1 year. Don't do 5 years. Because 5 years, you'll be like, oh my God, I'm going to make this game and I make so much money and I'm going to make this game. It's like so silly. Right.
So everybody out there, instead of asking me what what a business plan looks like, because I get developers coming to me like, can you help me make a business plan? And I'm like, I have actually been doing this 25 years and I have never made a business plan. I have no idea. So you can go talk to her and she can help you, because I have no idea. Can you talk about how you found your core team?
By accident, honestly, is because it's the story of how I didn't give up, because when I hit that rock bottom, I was essentially alone. And then I went out to events. I keep talking to people and telling people, okay, I want to make this kind of game. And then somehow, you know, I found my team. Like, I think I was talking to my programmer. We met at an anime convention, like, what, 4 years ago, 3 years ago? And I had just a small booth, and then he had a booth across, and he felt like, oh, it's such a silly game, but he just wanted to show, you know, it's a student game. And then we got talking with with the rest of my team, and then we gel well. Next thing you know, years later, me and him are on IGN Japan Tokyo Game Show.
So there is a good amount of randomness that comes into all of this.
Oh yeah, mine is quite random.
So YouTube however you want to phrase this, whatever you're comfortable with, what are the ways that a partner can betray you or have betrayed you in the past?
I think one of the things that I mentioned was think about who you want in your company in the very beginning, like as in who's going to help you. If the person is putting in money, do they want equity? That's the part where I feel like you should really, 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 really think about it, because I've seen, like, it didn't happen to me, but this one I've seen happen many times. And what will end up happening is that because both parties own shares in the company, it becomes a deadlock and nothing can be done. And it's sad. And, you know, like, one minute you guys are best friends and the next minute you guys are mortal enemies. I've seen many of those cases happen, and I think that's one of the things that I feel like I would caution people about. Like, really think about whether or not, like, I think the saying, this is a saying that I learned from one of my partners in film, like, you have to trust that person when you are, if you drink, like, you're blind, like, knocked out drunk, and you can sleep next to the person without the person stealing your money. That kind of trust. So that's the number one I would think is how a partner can betray you.
All right, next one up. How do you find and hire the people that are really invested in your company or project?
Okay, so this is the same as the question, the two questions before this. It's really about my journey, and a lot of the times I meet people coincidentally, or people who have seen what I do in the region, and they reach out to me. Now people are reaching out to me rather than I go look for them when it comes to hires. But in the beginning, it's more of me going out there, going for conventions, events, game shows, saying to people, I'm making this, and let's test it out. Like, I wouldn't want somebody to be like a shareholder in my company, but I want to see whether or not I can work with this person. So maybe I'll do a small project with them, and then if we, you know, we gel well together, then, you know, let's make a game.
And a lot of it too, this is where contract comes into play. I mean, you've got to make sure that you're protected, your company's protected, if that doesn't work out. We always like to say contracts are made for, you know, when things are bad, not for covering things when they're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So from a Captured Rapture on YouTube, what's your stance on equity versus rev share versus salary for new indie game studio hires? What considerations did you have when you first started?
What does this mean, actually? Like when you hire somebody, they get equity? Is that what that means?
Yeah, I mean, how are you paying them? How are they being compensated?
Oh, okay. So I pay people out of client work. So, like, in the beginning, when I said that, when I had nothing, I found jobs to roll money with. So those money essentially funded the first ever game. And then through the second one was funded by Wings and ID at Xbox. That's how I do my salary. For equity, again, I would hit on the side of caution. Rev share is not so bad, like, especially if you're starting out, and I believe that if you word it nicely, it is quite clean and quite clear cut, because you cannot lie on Steam sales anyway. So like, yeah, there's no way of you like cheating them or them cheating you for whatever reason. So, like, if you don't have money to pay their market rate and then you offset with rev share, that is also another acceptable way of, like, balancing things out, as long as you keep track of and be transparent about Steam sales. And it's not that hard for people to find out about Steam sales anyway.
Next one up. Oh, so expanding on the who you get first. Would you recommend teaming up with people like biz dev folks or marketers from the very beginning at that starting point at your company?
Yes, because I also recognize that some of the studios that I do talk to, they are essentially the artists, and the artists are more often than not eccentric and very close to their the art is close to their heart. And what happens is that they don't know how to talk business. They don't know how to talk PR. They don't know how to talk marketing. So if you are that kind of person, I would really think about getting somebody who you will be able to do the biz dev side for you, who will have that flair of talking to publishers or investors at game events, because I recognize that not many people have this skill set either.
And keep in mind too, you don't always have to hire those folks. I mean,
yeah,
there are contractors and consultants.
I mean, yeah, like, there are services as well. Yeah,
like mine. So yeah. All right, we've got one more question right now, and then we may keep going simply because we're having some technical issues on the next guest.
Okay.
But so, are there core traits that you think are valuable in team members that are inclined towards your team members? Reliability, for example, or creativity?
Reliability. Like, I feel like a lot of my team were started off inexperienced. Like, they were not the best of the best in Malaysia or in Southeast Asia. Like, but it's because they are so reliable and they learn from other devs. They are willing to learn. There's no like ego around it. So I feel like I always feel like I rely on people who are reliable. Also, life happens because, you know, sometimes I get sick. Some people, you know, I get worried that if I, you know, as a studio owner, I get sick, and then what will happen to my team? Will they just like panic and stop working? But no, they know exactly how to move forward without me for a few days. So yeah, I would pick that.
Next one up from LinkedIn, regarding finding collaborators, it's not unknown for people to gel well initially, but have the wheels come off or find they're uncommitted or can't keep the deadlines once the project's underway. Any tips for guarding against this?
Contracts is number one, I would say. Like, be upfront about what everyone's expectations are, like, especially because if you are starting out and maybe funding isn't like, you don't have a well of money to like pay people their market rate. So what? So be upfront about people's commitments. What are their commitments to the project? What is the timeline? What is your timeline? Can they meet it? Because ultimately, sometimes you have to be a bit maybe ruthless is a bit harsh, but you know, as a studio owner, you do have to learn when things are not working out, and there needs to be a clause of what happens when things are not working out, because it's understandable. Maybe some people have worked too long on a project and they get burned out, or they don't feel as passionate. So what can you do? Can you like get everything from them? Do you have the rights to get everything from them and then transfer it to hopefully another person? Things like that. So I would having a contract and being clear about deliverables and expectations and timeline would clear most of those things out. And if either party does not meet the expectations, at least it's clear, like, okay, this is what we do. We can terminate, and hopefully there's no hard feelings and we can all move on.
So just as a further reinforcement of what we say frequently on here, it's like, no matter what you're going through as a developer, you're not the only one. There are other people. And Dread Vector Studios says, the story is amazingly encouraging. I launched in 2020 and everything said so far is on par with my experience. And so, I mean, we say quite frequently that you don't learn anything when you do it right. And so making the mistakes is how you learn and how you grow. But having said that, if you could go back and fix one mistake that you made, where would you go? What would you do different?
It's hard to say, right? Because I feel like one thing I change would alter how I am today, you know, like
you've altered the timeline.
I've altered the timeline. I might actually be either mega successful in a big corporation and suddenly I become cold and ruthless businesswoman, or I quit games entirely. Who knows, right? But I want to say things like, I mean, maybe I would not make a big VR game as my first project, or maybe I wouldn't trust the person that that I did back then. But you know, those things made me the person I am today, and is essentially the reason why I'm even here with you guys. So hard to say.
And so your games haven't been what most people call the typical games anyway, especially narrative titles are harder to pitch. I mean, any specific mm-hmm. advice for going out and pitching games that don't just perfectly fit into certain segments and genres?
I feel like I pitched so much that I'm a narrative studio that at this point in this region, I am actually quite known as that person that does narrative. So I feel like I don't think for those of you who are making your studio or your first game, you should make the game that you want to make. And somehow or other, you will find either the audience or the funder or the publisher or any of these, somehow you will land there, hopefully. Because I feel like if I wanted to fit into something else, I think I wouldn't know how to. So yeah.
It is. I mean, and, you know, there's 600 some publishers out there. I mean, so yeah. If you try to build something that you think they're gonna like yeah. you said earlier, you're probably gonna miss the mark anyway. Make the game that you want to make.
Exactly.
A really good one from YouTube. Would there be a benefit to developing a crisis management plan for the development when starting an indie studio? And if so, how would you approach that?
Wow, I have actually never made a crisis management plan, but I've seen bigger corporations back in my advertising days have this, and it is huge. And I feel like it might be even an overkill, like a little bit overkill. It's not bad to prepare, like what I would think that, okay, so say you borrowed money from, I don't know, your sister, and she gave you $100,000 over US dollars. I guess the crisis management would be like, okay, you failed. What's your plan on paying her back?
That's the indie level. Your sister.
Maybe, or, you know, work every day at a bigger studio, or you know, McDonald's or whatever, and pay her back slowly. You know, the initiatives that come. I don't know. I really don't know. But I, that's what I did when I first like got a little bit of like seed funding. I was thinking like, okay, what happens if I did fail? Like, will I sell my house or whatever? And no, I didn't end up selling a house. But you know, it's good to know that you have, you know, a backup of a backup just in case it doesn't work out. Even on a personal level, like, okay, you tried to make a studio, it failed. What's your backup? Maybe because you have all this wealth of knowledge as an indie studio, maybe you work at another bigger indie publisher or bigger game company. And, you know, having those kind of ideas or plans kind of reassures you that, okay, if things don't work out, life goes on, I still get a job and, you know, still be in games.
I have seen developers over the years mortgage their house and take money out of things like that to finance development. And I always just absolutely cringe when I see that, because this industry, even if you do everything right, we actually had a talk on that a couple of conferences ago, you can still fail. I mean, it's absolutely so risky. That's where having that plan, you know, with the company structure, because at least here in the States, and I don't know Malaysian law, if your company fails, they can't sue you personally. They can't take away your house because of that. But one of the ones that I never really understood until I started my company was, you know, the company that I started working with was two business partners. They wouldn't fly on the same airplane because if something happened,
oh,
they would have both been, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I was
I've heard this.
And then
I've heard this.
Every time I get on a flight to go to a conference, I'm like, oh shit, what if something happens here? Am I going to be able to make payroll and do all of that sort of stuff? So it's things that you don't really, I mean, I understand the need for a crisis management plan, but I've never done one either. It's like, I know where the money is, but it you don't really think about it as a small studio because you're like, oh, whatever. It's like, I have bigger things to do than deal with it like that. All right, so we're still trying to get our next guest rebooted and working. We're having internet issues on that one. What's next? When you have your, you know, you start out and you stumble and then you get it right and you succeed, how do you plan for growth?
Okay, so the growth part is I'm a bit more careful with it because growing too fast, maybe I should have added that in the slides, but growing too fast might even like be the one that causes you more pain than not. So I am right now, there's like, I'm manning a 8-man team right now. So not including me. So there's 9 technically of us. And I feel like if I grow to anything more than 13 or 15, I think I would lose it unless I get somebody to manage everyone. But even then, overheads become very high. So I think that as a small studio, I don't think I want to grow too big. So right now it's quite comfortable and I can pay people living wages. And I think, and hopefully in the next few months, even increase people's pay. But if I add more manpower, that means more people to feed. So that's kind of scary.
And it does, because it puts more pressure on you. It's like, okay, now you've got to spend more time doing biz dev and admin stuff. More stuff coming in. And we see, I call it that deadly treadmill, where we see a lot of studios who do contract work. They're like, we're going to do contract work, and then we're going to take the profit and put it into our original game. But the reality is they never have spare people from the contract work. Yep. And it just becomes like an endless cycle. And so I agree. That whole growth thing is the part that scares me needlessly as well. So let's go to the big one then. What engine are you using?
Unity.
So, all right, but let's, we have time. Let's talk about this. So what has the last 2 weeks meant to you as a small developer relying on Unity?
I think according to them, my size and my growth, I'm not affected by it. But, you know, on the off chance that it will affect me in the future, it does feel kind of, do I really want to? Because right now we're on our third game and we're quite early. And it's either now or never to pivot, right? To jump to a different engine. But Unity was kind of the indie engine, and honestly the programmers and all are a bit mad.
it's absolutely, because it, beyond, even if they walk back the stuff that they've said, which they haven't actually done, they've made it sound like it and like, but they really haven't. It's a trust issue at this point. And I know every single engine has the terms of service that says we can change this shit if we want to. But the fact that they did it and so dramatically is the big issue.
Yeah.
It's all right. So we'll table it. And because our next guest is now ready, I'm being told. So,
okay, cool.
Thank you so much for one, being up in the middle of the night doing this. And to sharing everything, because that was fantastic. If you want a copy of the slide deck, make sure you get a free ticket to the conference, because everybody who has a ticket, that's how we send out the slide decks. And with that, thank you so much. I'm going to kick it over to Dan here, and we're going to get rolling on the next one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.